So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to 90 Day Fiancé MK. I'm Mr. O, and today, Ms. H and I will be discussing both Happily Ever After, Season 5, Episode 7, and The Other Way, Season 2, Episode 9. On Happily Ever After, Colt plays to the cameras, Larissa digs into Eric's recent past, Asuelu talks to his mom, Angela orders a pizza for Michael's mom, Paul and Karini move into their new digs, and Americans and Europeans unite in giving Andre a hard time. On The Other Way, Devin and Jihoon have major translator app problems, Tim gets the third degree for the 1,000th time, Ariella and Binium check out the Ethiopian hospital, Brittany and Yazan seek out family help, and Kenny and Armando have a moment with Jesus. We'll talk about all the couples, and as always, we'll end with our Students of the Week, class dunces, and life lessons. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star rating or some constructive feedback. And if you also watch Love After Lockup, you should check out our other podcast, Love After Lockup. Okay. Okay, thanks, stay safe and enjoy. Step one, step two, step three, step
four. Okay, hello, Mr. O.
Hello, Miss H. How's it going?
Good, it's going okay. Chugging along with summer and through this show.
Yeah, I know. Things are starting to change a little bit, but I'm not feeling positive about the country as a whole. So I just retreat to this show and I can feel better about myself.
I know, right? I feel like that's the basis of me watching reality shows in the first place. It
kind of
gives me a little ego boost. It makes me feel a little bit better about myself and the decisions I've been making.
Yeah, I don't wear a Speedo when I go to the beach, but I know if I chose to, I'd look better than Colt.
That's amen to that. All right, so let's start off with Asuelu and Kalani. Even though I know you're excited to talk about Colt, we're going to start somewhere else.
Okay.
So Asuelu, Kalani, and the kids go to the park to play with the kids. Kalani is frustrated because they haven't reached any kind of resolution, and she feels like she's just battling a teenager. Asuelu admits that he was in a bad place because of the canceled trip to Samoa, and he finally tries to talk to Kalani about their California trip. He starts by saying that walking away was not a smart idea, and he was wrong. He says he is sorry for telling her that Samoan women are better than her. Kalani thanks him for the apology and thinks that it is progress, but then says that words are empty and meaningless if his actions don't change. She points out that when he has apologized in the past, it doesn't actually change anything. Asuelu says she does the same thing, and Kalani gets a little irritated and tells him that this apology is about him, so let's focus on that. He says that he will learn from the past and show her that he won't do that, and he wants to give her a hug, and Kalani accepts a hug and a kiss. Asuelu says he feels happy and excited that she's accepted his apology, but he is still homesick. He then brings up his family that is living in Washington and asks if they can go and visit his mom and half-sisters who are living there. Kalani agrees as long as Asuelu will promise not to throw her under the bus during any disagreements and to not leave like he did in California. Asuelu agrees and says that he wants her to be his bus driver. Kalani is a tad skeptical and says she just hopes he follows through. Kalani gives us a little background that things have been strained with Asuelu's family because none of them made it to the wedding. They video call with Asuelu's mom and sister. Asuelu's mom is feisty and kooky and tells us that she's a lazy in America. She just eats and sleeps and waits for death. His sister warns that Asuelu better be taking care of Kalani and the family. His mom sides with Kalani in not taking the kids to Samoa. She is excited to see the grandbabies and welcomes the idea of a visit, but she also tells him that she needs money. His mom says that she is more important than his car. She demands $1,000, and Asuelu says he only has $500. He immediately goes back on his word and throws Kalani under the bus, saying that it's up to her on how much they can give. So, do you think that Asuelu actually understands Kalani's concerns? And does he actually understand the whole being thrown under the bus?
No, he clearly did not understand thrown under the bus because he did it instantaneously. Instantaneously. Right. Yeah, threw her under the bus. He did not understand that term, which I kind of blame on Kalani. Like, that is a weird, like, regional, like, there's people, I don't know that they even use that across the English-speaking world when you say throw somebody under the bus, right? It's not it's not an idiom. Idioms do not carry over well to different languages, right? And his English is not great. So speaking in idioms and stuff is not the best way to go about, you know, saying things that you want him to do or you need him to do. But
sure.
I don't think he understands. I don't think he understands what's going on at all. He just right, is totally
because then
lost.
He talks about the driver of the bus. Right. And I was like, oh, which was funny. But then it does make you kind of wonder, it's like, well, maybe you don't understand what she's trying to say.
Yes, you clearly didn't understand what that meant. And like, I don't know that he really understands why she was like the root of all her being upset. Like, mm-hmm. He gets it when he's like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't call her a fucking bitch.
Yeah, that's obvious. Sure.
Maybe I shouldn't have just randomly walked off and got on a bus. Okay.
Right.
Maybe I overreacted. But it's like, what are you overreacting to that I don't think he gets? Like,
yeah.
I feel like he thinks he's putting in like extra time with the family. And he's like, I'm doing more than anyone should expect me to do. This is crazy talk that you're mad at me. I still think he's on that boat.
Yeah. I truly don't think he understands why people are upset. And just even recently this week, he's been kind of popping off on social media, like getting really defensive about his edit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, don't follow me if you feel this way, which, granted, fair enough. Like, you know, sometimes it's kind of one of those things where I get that people, you might have haters because you did something, but I don't know. Is it really the place of the internet to really throw it in your face and really like hate on you on someone else's social media? You know, it's kind of like, you know, maybe you should just, maybe he knows he's an ass at this point.
Sure. And then it gets that weird crossover area where I almost feel like when people are on reality shows, they're characters,
yes. Right?
But like they're the person, that person's social media, that is a real person. Like the person that's on the screen is like character Asuelu built by Matt Sharp. Right.
Sure.
And to take that into like the real world is it causes all kinds of problems, which is why they really should log off.
Yeah, that's true. We've talked about this, or you suggested media, social media training.
Right. Especially because you're going to be like, I feel like he should like warn them, please, God, if you have a bad edit. And I know they don't like kind of give people a heads up. Be like, yeah, I kind of made you the bad guy this season. Just heads up. Like, here it comes.
Yeah. But I kind of almost feel like the reason why he's extra defensive is because I don't know if even looking back on this, he really gets what he did wrong.
Sure. Right.
Like, other than what you said, the obvious stuff, like calling someone a lying bitch. Obviously, that's not okay. But like
right.
The other stuff, I don't right. think he gets. I don't think he gets being the bad guy for kind of telling his mom, oh, it's up to Kalani. Like, you all figure it out yourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, and you know, I think, was it Kalani made the point when they're asking the money? That's a huge cultural change.
Yeah.
That you don't, they just don't get it. It doesn't carry the same weight. Like, to just straight up come out and ask your brother for money is like
right.
super tacky in America. And like, that damage is like, well, that's just what you do. Like,
yeah. I mean, and Asuelu tried to get out of it. To his credit, he was just like, I have diapers to buy and like food for the family.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. You want the money? Okay. We'll figure it out. I can give you mm-hmm. 500 now. When Kalani was talking about his mom being kooky, she is a kooky, feisty lady. she was funny.
Waiting to die sounded like a guilt trip you get from like an old, I guess my kids don't visit me and I'll just sit here and wait for death.
Oh, gosh. My mom and dad both like, my mom says it more on a serious note, but she says crap like that sometimes. And then my dad, like, he's more funny about it. Like, he tells me that some of the streetlights are so long that you could just die waiting for it to turn. Like, he'll say stuff like that. And I'm like, all right, Dad.
Yeah. My parents aren't quite there yet. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. It just, so it's one thing taking a joke on it. But I feel like she's probably, or he said his half-sisters are up there. But, like, I feel like we should have known. Especially when he was talking about going to Samoa, that his mother
right.
is like...
Because weren't we speculating that his mom was going to be the one to have to take care of the babies?
Right.
So obviously we didn't know she was here.
Three states away. Yeah, it's like...
Yeah. So I can kind of understand Kalani's whole thing where she's like, but we don't have the best relationship. It started from the fact that they didn't come to the wedding. They could have absolutely come to the wedding.
Right. Yeah, like you said, it's not even coming across the country. Like there, it's like Utah to Washington, which I know the states out there are way bigger than the states over here.
Oh, they are. But I mean, you could still drive. Right. I mean, it's not if you didn't want to fly or it was a cost thing.
Sure.
Like you could still drive. I mean, it's not easy, but you know, you could have.
Yeah, totally. All right, so moving on. I'm going to start with Angela and Michael. Angela is still very upset following the aborted meeting with the female expats. Michael has since apologized. I don't know what for, but she's still steaming enough that when we first see her, she's backseat driving and calling all the drivers in Nigeria stupid. The conflict in this episode comes from the meal that Michael's mother and aunt are coming over for later. Angela has decided that this is her stand, and she is going to show everyone that she is not going to be a traditional Nigerian wife who stays in the kitchen and cooks while everyone else socializes. She says that at her apartment, they will work with American rules, where Michael will do the cooking because she is doing the paying. And we know who's doing the paying up for the apartment because in an argument over whose apartment it is, Angela's or, quote, ours, she shuts it down by asking, well, who pays for it? But anyway, they arrive at this market to buy food to prepare. It's an open-air market, but she was expecting a supermarket. So she decides to be a jerk the whole time. She doesn't like the oil in the old water bottles. She asks the rice lady for packaged rice and says that she just wants to order a pizza. Then she completely loses it when she goes to a butcher and sees a goat's head on his counter. It's a pretty much a typical overdramatic Angela who even has to, she even like takes a big swig of Coke just so she has something to spit out because she's so disgusted. The next we see them, they're getting ready for the meal. Michael is frying up some plantains, and Angela contributes her part. A pizza with pizza written on the side of the box with Sharpie. Just in case you didn't know what it was.
Right.
Michael's mother and aunt get a kick out of Michael doing the cooking, but wait until Angela is out of the room before chastising Michael for the disrespect of having different food than they were expecting. When Angela comes back, she sees they're not eating the plantains, so she busts out the pizza, which Aduke eats and says she enjoys. Angela shows Aduke how to pick up the pizza and fold it like an American, and she joins in. From Michael's perspective, the whole thing seems to be pretty hugely embarrassing, but Angela and Aduke seem to have a good time. That is until Aduke, who I didn't mention is Michael's mom, wishes them blessings and many children, which reminds Angela of the potential terrible news that she may be getting soon following her biopsy. Okay, so there's plenty of negative things to say about Angela.
Yes.
Which we'll get to, I'm sure. But I wanted to start off something positive this time.
Oh,
right?
Goodness, okay. How?
Well, come on, Aduke's great, right?
Oh, yeah, she's great.
She's so generous and, like, you know, it's funny because she, you know, like she even let the aunt yell at Michael. She didn't yell at Michael. She let the aunt take care of it.
Right.
But she's so welcoming to Angela and so warm with Angela. Like, I really do like seeing the two of them interact.
Yeah.
So that was the good stuff.
Okay.
The bad stuff. All right. Come on. Like, she didn't have to. She fake gagged, right? That was a fake gag.
Everything about Angela bothered me in this episode. It's you know, we keep on joking about the Angela image rehabilitation situation that's going on. This set her back quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, okay, so let's start off with, because there's so many things, but let's start off with whose apartment it is. So Michael at some point says his money is their money.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he's that wrong, especially because she won't allow him to work.
Right.
And so it's almost like you're paying someone for companionship. She is paying him to be her 24/7 hotline, her moral support. And so, yes, like, you don't have all the money in this situation. Like, your money should be our money.
Right.
And I just, yeah, I had a problem with her because she just seems to want to have control over this entire situation. And by him, like, not being able to work, it's like another way she can control him because she controls the finances.
Right. Yeah. I mean, no, I thought the same thing. I was like, I'm, you know, more or less okay. I come around on this in later in my life. I'm okay with, like, you know, a couple having separate finances and having, you know, your money and my money, and we work something out and we pay for things, that works for people. Mm-hmm. But, and I get being like, oh, no, I worked hard, I paid for this, you know, I did more, I can get that up to the point where the only reason they don't have money is because you will not let them earn money. Then right. You can't hold, no, it's my money, I'll do what I want, over their head anymore.
Oh, absolutely. Their situation is definitely a little bit more unique. Because usually, isn't it the other way around? Like,
oh, certainly.
Please, get a job. Please work.
That's what we hear from everybody else, yeah. We're like, oh, but you're taking care of us just fine. It's like, oh, my God. Right.
And I this know. Is like no, Libby and Andre.
Right. But this is, if you tell somebody they can't work, you can't then also say, but it's my money and I'll do with it as I please. Because once you've told somebody not to work, now you've put them in a situation where your teammate and then the money comes in is yours, as is legally like seen by courts, right? And that's why like a lot of, I don't know, prenups fail and things fail. Like you can't tell the wife, no, you stay home with the kids, I'll go work, and then when you divorce, take all the money.
Like, that's just not fair. So the other thing that really annoys me about Angela is she keeps on saying, well, I'm American, like all Americans are like her. Mm-hmm. Because according to her, American rules mean that women never do anything by themselves, because she was making it sound like the only way she would be in the kitchen is if Michael was in there helping her and it was all 50-50 in the kitchen, or if anything, Michael's the one cooking. Like, that's the American way? Not really.
I think she was going with the American way of one person buys the food, the other person cooks the food. And so she's still holding the money thing over his head. Be like, well, if you didn't buy the food, then... oh, you better help prepare it or like do the preparation. I think that's what she's going for, the American way, because no, traditionally it's not like some sort of American tradition that, yes, the men do the cooking in America. Of course, everyone knows this. This is the way it works. Like, obviously not.
I feel like, yeah, I mean, women traditionally, even in America, have done the cooking. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nowadays it's kind of more of a logistic thing, right? It's kind of like, who is home to cook? You know, because men and women are working, who gets home sooner? You know, who's able to cook, you know? So
yeah, that's why my dad always did the cooking in my house.
Yeah. So it's like different mm-hmm. factors. And so it's like, you can't really say that's the American way. I wish you would just quit saying that.
Right.
It makes us all look
awful.
Well, and
the thing, like, all look awkward. And I promise you, not all of us would gag over a butcher shop.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, the meat. Oh, we've never seen this in America. Thank God for the USA. Like, I've been to a butcher before, like, and I live in America, yeah.
So the one thing that she says is, she's like, don't you know that I'm a hypochondriac? And so I was kind of like, well, if you're a hypochondriac, that means you know that you're not actually sick.
Yes. I feel like once you've gotten to the point where you said, I'm a hypochondriac, then you're like, so, you know.
Like, yes, you know you're solved faking the problem. It, and that it's just in your head.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah. It's like, do hypochondriacs technically know that they're hypochondriacs? I feel like they don't.
I feel like they shouldn't, because if they did, like...
then it would really be Munchausen's, I thought.
Right. I'm not sure what the difference is, honestly.
Well, Munchausen's is you're acting sick
To get attention.
Right? And hypochondriacs, they're acting sick because they honestly always think they're sick.
Yeah, but there's always a little bit of, you know, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. Kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
You can also be so paranoid you're getting sick that you actually do physically make yourself sick.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But yeah, so that was a weird statement. And the pizza box. I was just like, what is happening right now? Because you saw it in the background, so you didn't even see the top of it. And it was just like some kid with a Sharpie, just like you said, writes pizza on it. I was like, that cannot be the official pizza box.
Did the kid with the Sharpie do it, or did production like dig up a pizza box and was like, write pizza on the side of it? We need to be able to tell it's pizza. Right?
Yeah, but that's like a legitimate microwave. Pizza.
It was, and I was really confused if she was able to obtain a pizza in Lagos, which is not surprising. Lagos is a gigantic city.
Sure.
Of course you're going to be able to get a pizza in Lagos, right? You're going to be able to get tacos there too, I'm sure. Like, literally everything, right? But then the mom was like, pizza? This
what
bread
is this?
With
I've
cheese?
Never seen this before.
Like, that just seemed out of place to me. Yeah.
I felt like how she was kind of treating Michael and that whole dinner situation was just disgusting to me.
Oh, it was.
It was like she was doing it on purpose, like out of principle, she is going to embarrass Michael, go against their culture. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like an insult.
It definitely was. I mean, because it would have been one thing if she was like, no, I'm going to show him the American way and I will give you the traditional American way of being too busy to cook and ordering a pizza. That's totally that's totally American cultural tradition. Right. But to then be like, no, 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 I'm going to make you have a cook. It's almost like, why didn't she put him in a pink apron? If she was just going to go all out, because that's what she was doing. She was like, look at the control I have over him, making him cook in front of his mother. Ha, ha, ha. Look at that. Like, do a little dance for me, Michael.
Right. She was definitely trying to demoralize him. And, you know, maybe if it was a different culture, that wouldn't have any effect on him. But mm-hmm. the fact that in his culture, like, that isn't his, quote, place, it isn't right for her to humiliate him in front of his mom. And just even how excited she got about it before it even happened. She's like,
I'm going to open the door. In America, women open the door. And another made up American cultural tradition.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the look on his mom's face when she sees this. You know, it's just like all for fun with her. And I just don't think that's right. I don't think that's her respecting their culture at all.
No. I mean, there's one way to respectfully disagree with their culture, a way to bring my culture into it, respecting their culture, and basically doing a na 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 at their culture is not it.
Right. Absolutely not. So I don't know. The Angela image rehabilitation plan isn't working out so well for them.
But
right
she
now.
Might have cancer, Ms. H. So we had to end that. We had to end with that just so we could
Sure,
be like,
sure.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I hope she doesn't, but I don't think that really changes any of this. This disgusting behavior has nothing to do with her potential cancer, you know?
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to Colt and Jess and Debbie. So they all go to meet Jess's family, and for some reason, Colt thinks a polo shirt and a dinner jacket is the appropriate attire for this meeting. Jess thinks that Debbie likes to fight, so she is worried that Debbie will not get along with her family. She gives them one last quick warning as they walk into the backyard that her family is crazy as she starts whoop whoop to greet them. And Debbie also joins in. Silvio, Jess's dad, tells us that Jess has never dated an American before. It sounds like he just wants whoever is dating Jess to not be using her for her body and to lock it down with the proposal. Debbie is happy to be meeting Jess's family as she never met Larissa's family. Jess is trying to tell Debbie about the Brazilian kiss greeting as Debbie awkwardly goes in for a real kiss with Silvio. Yeah, Debbie then thinks Silvio is weird. They drink beer and eat chicken hearts, which Debbie politely tries. Debbie recognizes another Brazilian dish on the table and Jess takes that moment to announce to her family that Colt's ex was a Brazilian girl. Silvio then asks about Larissa, and he wants to know how long Colt was married. How long has he been divorced? Why did he get divorced? Colt tells everyone he wasn't looking for love, but then Silvio asks him if he's just using Jess for revenge, which prompts Jess to ask Colt what does he want with her. Colt says that he wants a family with her. He tries to tell Silvio that Jess is the best person he has ever met, so Silvio accepts Colt. Jess's aunt Giselle says that if they get married, that she insists that it happens in her house. Debbie is just now freaked out that this trip will turn into an engagement trip and voices her concerns over how fast they are moving. Jess gets defensive about her relationship with Colt. Debbie is asking what the big rush is. Jess doesn't really answer the question, but instead starts telling her family in Portuguese how Debbie does everything for Colt, even though he's 34. At one point, she sticks her hand in Debbie's face, and that's a wrap. Debbie says she's done. Things get heated as Jess seems to think that this is some kind of amusing game. Colt tries to calm her down and tells her to go easy on Debbie, who has remained pretty calm during this whole exchange because she doesn't want to make a scene in front of her family. She says it reminds her of Larissa. Debbie tries to excuse herself back to the hotel. Silvio's take on it was that Debbie wants Colt all to herself and that she is way too bossy. And this just in, the sky is blue. Colt offers to walk Debbie to the cab to send her back to the hotel by herself. Colt says the night isn't about Debbie, but it's about Jess and her family, so that's why he chooses to stay. Colt comes back to the hotel the next morning looking hungover, disheveled, and just generally a hot mess. He says that he had a really good time with Jess's family, so he has no regrets about leaving Debbie. Colt is clearly on the struggle bus as Debbie airs her grievances of Jess's behavior the night before. Colt uses alcohol as an excuse and says he doesn't remember any of this or wasn't reading the situation the same way. Colt says that when Jess drinks, she gets more extreme and also uses that as an excuse. Debbie tells him to read the signs and to acknowledge he doesn't actually know her. She warns him of repeating mistakes. Debbie asks him if he wants to get married as quickly as was implied by Jess. Colt thinks Debbie is overreacting, but he does value her opinion. Colt and Jess go to the beach where Colt shows off his Brazilian bathing suit. Oof. Jess says she wants sex with Colt all the time as she maniacally laughs.
I don't get it.
I don't,
that's just like, ooh, I like eating this poop. That's my favorite dinner. It's poop.
Nice analogy.
You can say that, but I don't believe you.
Yeah, right. He then confronts her about sticking her hand in front of his mother's face. Jess defends herself and calls him a baby boy. He tells her that's demoralizing, and he's a grown man who has a job, was married, and pays the bills. He then turns it around and says, well, you're a daddy's girl. Colt says that without him, his mom would have no one and that she just doesn't understand. He tells her that she needs to have more patience with his mother. They end the argument by saying they love each other, and that was that. All right, so that actually, I kind of have a feeling what you're going to say then. Do you really believe that Jess is that sexually into Colt? She keeps on talking about him, like, all the time.
I mean, I guess it's possible. I mean, you know, there's people who are into weird stuff, like, and...
What category of weird stuff is Colt?
I don't know. It's like the, what's the female version of a chubby chaser? Like, that's it, right? Isn't that what it is?
He's a chubby chaser? But it's like, it's not even that he's chubby. He's just got a weird body. It's not even, like, masculine at all.
No, I mean, there's a lot going on there. Like, even, I said this before, I'm bothered by his weird patchy beard. Like, that he doesn't maintain well. And, like... But, I mean, I don't want to talk too much about the Brazilian bathing suit because he clearly was, like, he knew what he was doing when he put that on.
Us.
He was trolling
us. Oh, yeah,
he's absolutely
super trolling us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, okay, I have, like, a conspiracy theory. Like, I feel like these two got together and they're like, hey, let's pretend that we're in this relationship. Let's pretend that we are super into each other. Let's pretend this for PR sake, for just exposure, like fame whoring.
Yeah.
Let's like get a season on the show.
Get a season out of it.
Both get paid. Yeah. Because I mean, the rumor is they get paid a lot more for Happily Ever After than they do for like the original 90 Day Fiancé. And so, you know, he's making more money. And I feel like that would make sense why she keeps on saying she loves having sex with Colt every 2 seconds is because, you know, part of their deal would be, you know, how can we make me look better? Kind of like the Colt image rehabilitation program.
Well, I mean, you say that, but then he goes full classic Colt at the dinner.
God.
Just classic, like his mom and his girlfriend screaming at each other and him going, wait, hold on a second, everybody.
Oh, gosh.
Calm down. Yeah. And then it's like, I fixed the situation. Like, that's like the whole, that's like.
Yes, that was him and Larissa all the way. But, I mean, maybe Jess and Colt are in on it, but their families aren't. Because you're going to get true, dramatic Debbie coming out, like, raw emotions. And, you know, that's what's going to make the television show.
Right.
So it's like, my conspiracy theory is that Colt and Jess are in cahoots because I find it very difficult to believe that someone is that obsessed with having sex with Colt. Like, I can understand why you're with him and that's just a result of being in a relationship with him. It's just a thing that you kind of like grin and bear it. But to talk about it as excessively as that.
Yes, I can even see you would enjoy it if it was somebody you truly cared about and truly loved. And you would see past a lot of stuff. But she's just like, oh, no, I saw his body and it made me horny. And it's like, did it, though? Did it?
Yeah. It's like, all right. You know, maybe you would be really into like an older lesbian lady. Like, I feel like that might be your type.
Wait. Whose type? Who's
Jess,
going
through? Well, Jess's type. Not Colt's type. That might be his type, too. No, actually, Colt, he has a specific type. I mean, it's out of his league, if we're talking about physically, but
Yeah. You know? So, I mean, I couldn't get Debbie, because the other thing he was trolling us with too is the weird hungover. Like, he put his hair like that.
His hair looked ridiculous.
But that wasn't a natural hungover hair. That was like, oh, I'm going to make myself look hungover, so let me just move my hair up and be crooked, make my glasses more crooked than they usually are, and go, I'm not feeling great today.
I'm hungover. I drink a lot with Jess's family. What in the world was he wearing?
And come on, they were like halfway through the dinner and he was already blackout drunk. I don't remember that. Like, come
on. He's like, I don't remember this conversation. It's like, you were right. You were trying to break it up.
Yeah. And so he wants us to believe he was blackout drunk at that point in the night. Come on. I don't buy it.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of acting going on.
So much acting.
Even how they finished their argument, it wasn't even like they really came to any kind of resolution. It was just like one of those stupid arguments that end with, I love you. I love you. Okay. I love you too. Oh, okay.
I'm a man. I'm a man. I'm not a boy. Why did you call me a boy? I'm a man.
Yeah. He gets really upset by being called baby boy.
Yeah. Well, it's because he is one.
Yeah. He really is.
All right. Let's go to Paul and Carini.
Okay.
So we first see Paul with his two dogs in the car. He had them boarded at a training facility while he was in Brazil, which raises more questions than it answers. Like, how did he pay for that? Did he plan on boarding them indefinitely? Was he going to send them to Brazil? We'll get there. But anyway, he's on his way to set up his and Carini's new home. After they toured the two trash trailers last time, a small modular home opened up, which was a much better option for them. It's kind of like a standalone studio apartment, and it's pretty small, but it's the best they can afford. He does some work to try to get ready for Carini and Pieri, but he's Paul and he's clumsy about the whole thing. He struggles to get the window shaker air conditioning in. He scrubs the fridge and then realizes he didn't get a mattress and whatever. He gets it together. Then he goes and picks up Carini, who is anxious and excited to see their new place. And when she gets there, she's actually quite pleased. She tells us in an interview that what she really wanted were basically four walls and a place to call home, and this place checks those boxes. The one thing that's missing for her, though, is curtains or blinds on the windows. So Paul tries to temporarily fix it by shoving some pillows into the window frames, and they all kind of get settled in. So it was a pretty short scene with them. So, you know, this is one of the ones. He was not a bad husband this time. Good Paul this time. So there's not really much to talk about because it was so short. So, not counting dorm rooms, where's the smallest place you've ever lived?
Oh, my place in D.C. It was like a shoebox. It was smaller than that place, 100%.
Really?
Like, you could literally touch my kitchen from, like, I wouldn't even have to get out of bed. Like, I could have cooked food from my bed, which was concerning when I cooked, like, bacon, because it's, like, bacon splatter on your bed.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, that's definitely the smallest place. But it was cute and comfy, and so...
And you didn't have a husband and a baby that you were trying to share it with.
Well, yeah, that would have been, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine having to share that space. Yeah. But I mean, if anything, the one thing you can always say about Paul is that his intentions are always in the right place.
Sure.
The execution is just so terrible all the time. But I would say for the most part, the place was pretty nice and it was clean and it looked nice. It looked just as nice as their place in Brazil.
Yeah.
Even though it was a little bit on the small side.
And the place in Brazil was not big.
No, it wasn't. So, I mean, like, same, you know? But I had a question for you about the shaker AC unit.
Right.
So, aren't you supposed to, like, bolt those things to something? Like, I feel like that seems like to have it wedged in the window like that does not seem like a stable solution. And I can't imagine.
That's actually what provides most of the support is the window itself. So, it doesn't... It kind of
sits. So you are supposed to wedge it in there.
You do wedge it in there.
And then that's it. So if you were to open the window, goodbye air conditioning unit.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh.
So they do have ones that, like they do have those accordion things on the side that like stretch out. Yeah. But those are just, that's just to seal like the window. Like they do not provide any support to the air conditioner at all. And those do screw in. You do like screw them into the window frame. But basically it's like the air conditioner sits on the window sill. And then you kind of put the window down behind it and the window keeps the air conditioner from falling backwards outside. But that's pretty much it. Like, it's the window that holds it up. And so I have seen people who will actually screw it into the window on top so you can't open the window with it in there.
Yes, that would be my thought, is because, like, well, what if someone accidentally does that? Like, I can absolutely see Karini just not knowing how things worked and opening the window and it falling out.
What you'll see if you go to cities, because this is apparently, I didn't know this, not a thing that they really have out there, and they're all over the place here. Is when you go to cities or you go to like old college campuses when they put in the air conditioning after the building, they usually have like, they will install like a rack outside the window that it actually sits on.
I was going to say, I've seen them. Like, I mean, I lived in DC. There's a ton of buildings that had them, but I just didn't realize that they're just like sit in the window, like wedged in. That just seems really unsafe. And Paul brought up a good point. Like, he's on the ground floor. Any old person who wants an AC unit, just go over there, push their window open, grab it, and go.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. So there's definitely, in a place like that, what people would generally do is if they're not home, they take it out of the window.
Oh.
And just, like, keep it on the floor. It is a huge hassle. That's why I don't live on the ground floor anywhere, if I can avoid it.
Yeah, but okay, my question is, how in the world is he paying for this house?
I don't know. It's got to be more than the destroyed trailer they saw before, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So it's like, where did you magically come up with money? Because wasn't the whole thing why he wanted to live with his parents is because he didn't have money? He couldn't even pay for the hotel for them to be at. His mom was paying for that.
Well, this is certainly cheaper. This is certainly cheaper than the hotel.
Sure. But he wasn't even paying for that.
That's true.
I mean...
That's true. But you, and because you usually, when you move in, you got to give them 2 months rent.
Yeah, or something, right? A deposit or something.
Right. That's what you, 2 months rent, usually one of the months is a deposit.
Yeah. But
I don't know. He doesn't, still didn't have a job, but.
Oh, gosh. I kind of wonder a little bit if this is like a TLC, like advance, or if this is like a mom, don't say anything to father advance.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if we'll find out. If we don't find out, then it was a TLC advance.
Yeah, my guess too. All right, so let's talk about Larissa. So Larissa calls Eric on the phone, aka Little Kitten, to tell him that Carmen doesn't like him and she's getting kicked out. He kind of reluctantly offers his space. Larissa tells him that she wants to do the right thing and take things slow and insists that's okay, I can have my own room. He says that he will come and pick her up. Larissa seems to have packed up pretty quickly. They are talking about her moving in, and Larissa tells Eric that it's fine because she will have her own room. They can see each other when they want to, and they don't have to be like twins. Eric says he will lock his door if he doesn't want her to be in there. We find that Eric has another roommate, David, who is concerned about Eric and doesn't think much of Larissa. Larissa tries to connect with David since they have gaming in common. Larissa asks if David has ever played Blow to Born, and David plays dumb and asks her more about it. By the way, that's Bloodborne. Larissa tells him outright that she thinks they will be good friends. Larissa tells David about her probation, and he tells her that if she tries to hit him, he'll just run away. Larissa takes a look at an almost empty room and thinks that it will make a fine castle for the queen, except that animal sitting on the table, which is just a ceramic hedgehog. The queen does not approve, and she asks Eric to take it away. Eric tells her that it's important, and his name is Roll. Larissa says it reminds her of Colt because it is fat and white. Eric just tells her to put it in the closet if she doesn't like it, but she says, you know, I'll take care of it. Larissa has high hopes, and she can see herself living with Eric in that house for a long time. There's more strategic sponsor placement coordinated by Larissa. She meets up with Hannah to update her on her life. Larissa asks Hannah if she remembers Eric, and she says, oh yeah, that loser? Larissa tells her they got back together, and Hannah asks her, are you dumb? Larissa then tells her that she moved in with Eric and things are different because they had a 360 change. Hannah insists that she never heard anything good about Eric and wonders if she's just with him because she doesn't want to be alone. And Larissa tells us she loves him. Hannah just straight up says she doesn't support this and thinks it's a terrible idea. She will try not to hate him if this is really going to happen, but she just wants her to go slow. And Larissa says they're like roommates. Larissa says that Eric and her grew up a lot since their break it up, so he could be the love of her life. Later, we get a title card saying that Larissa looked through Eric's phone without him knowing, and she found he was texting someone he was possibly involved with. He was talking shit on Larissa and said that she is a bad mother and she doesn't shower. So Larissa pulls a Larissa and calls the woman to get this story straight. Natalie picks up the phone and Larissa asks if she knows Eric and wants to know what he said about her. Natalie immediately throws Eric under the bus and starts off by saying that Eric is an insult to men. She tells her that she met Eric in Colorado Springs when he was visiting his family. She says that he bashed her in front of her, a stranger at the time, and in front of his family, which included spilling all the tea on their sex life and her sex life with Colt. Larissa is shocked and can't believe Eric was so mean and showed absolutely no respect for her. Natalie is continuing to give her the gory details when Eric comes home. She is being interviewed saying how she feels destroyed as a woman, and the producer asks her if she wants to talk to Eric, and Larissa kind of says, yeah. So it was ugly, and I'm not surprised by any of this, but what do you think Eric's motivation is for talking shit on Larissa and then literally just turning around, not 360, but 180, and turning around and getting back together again with her?
Well, we suspect he mostly wants back on the show, right?
Yes, fame more.
But I suspect he was closer to where he is. I feel like he was just talking shit because he was mad. Like, he was mad he broke up. So it was like, I still think, you know, he kind of like overcompensated. I don't think he was ever on the, I actually hate this woman and I don't want anything to do with her. I think he was just mad she broke up with him. So he just like took it out by talking all the shit, because Larissa said she did the same thing. There's a reason all Larissa's friends are like, I've never heard anything good about Eric, because she broke up with Eric and then just trashed him to them.
Right. I also think we kind of forget sometimes that Eric is young. He's still in his like mid-20s. He's just going to deal with this immaturely, right? And doesn't that seem like something an immature person would do?
Yeah.
Like, you break up, and so instead of, you know, kind of processing that feeling of rejection, you're like, oh, no, no, I was dumped, but I'm now going to reject you by telling everyone why you're a terrible person.
Yeah.
So he goes around bashing her to everyone. But at the same time, like, not that I agree that he did that. It's absolutely terrible, but it's like, he's young. He's immature. I can see how he did that. But how do you go from that to, oh, yeah, now I want to be with this person again?
I don't know. I mean, is he just horny? That's all I can think of.
I don't think he is.
I mean, I guess he does okay. He got this Natalie woman, too. Like, he has women. He has options. You're right.
But does he? I don't know. Natalie thinks he's a poor excuse for a human
wouldn't
being.
Wouldn't you? I mean, come on. Could you imagine just going out with somebody, starting out, getting to the point where you're going to meet their parents, and the whole time is there, he just talks shit about his ex. Like, is there – that's a huge red flag. And you'd be like, I'm going to get out of here as soon as I possibly can.
Yeah. But I don't know. I kind of feel like for her to say that, it's like not even against her. You know, like, I feel like people have bashed other people and you don't necessarily think like, oh, you're scum of the earth.
No, but whatever it was he said, because you said, like you said you talked about the sex life to his family. That's horrifying.
Ridiculous. Yeah, definitely. And okay. And it's not even like he was just talking about his sex life with her. I mean, we knew that Colt and Eric at some point had, you know, hung out together with Debbie. But they were comparing notes. And then he's now, you know, telling everybody Colt's sex life with Larissa. And that's not even his story to tell.
Right. And it's like, I can't imagine. Like, how would his family even respond? I wouldn't want to hear that. If my dad, things like that. Even my future. Why would I tell? I guess people would. Like, really specific graphic details, right?
Oh, yeah. Because they were bleeping things all out.
Right. And Larissa said something like, she's like, he does it the way I don't like to make sex. Yeah. Right? And so I was like, well, there's clearly something she's not doing that people want done. Right? And so it's like, yeah.
Okay.
My takeaway is she doesn't like to give blowjobs. But,
I don't know. know, because then they were talking, they were comparing notes about the blowjobs. Because that's what I think they were bleeping out.
Well, yeah, it says what she doesn't like, right? So I feel like it was like she should, you know, and that's what's really bad is like when you're trash talk about someone, I don't know, trash talk. When you're talking about how bad some sex with someone was, which is what it was. Mm-hmm. It was like, it wasn't like good notes. It was, let's talk about all the ways Larissa sucks in the bedroom, right? Or doesn't suck in the bedroom, actually. But like, it's all about, you know, it's talking about stuff that she won't do, right? And so,
yeah,
I don't know. It's just like, which is like, but that almost makes it feel like, well, if you're going around ragging on someone based on what they won't do, then you feel you're owed that thing? Like, that's just weird and, like, really demanding.
It didn't even seem like Eric was that into Larissa. I mean, even now that they're supposedly back together again, it doesn't seem that he's into her. Like, nowhere in this does it seem like, oh, they're a couple. Like, even Larissa says, oh, we're like roommates. It's like, yes, that is exactly what you are.
Right.
This
I mean, it's
a transactional roommate.
To the point where he was like, it was very much like, never an option. Like, you're gonna sleep in my bed. Like,
yeah, he was kind of like, well, I guess you can sleep in my bed until you get your own bed. But even then, it wasn't like a hey, sleepy.
Yeah, it just Yeah,
it
you're
was
right.
Just like, well, I guess so.
I guess we'll have to sleep head to toe. I guess
you yeah. Go sleep well, upside down. Sleep on a couch.
Yeah, you want to sleep on the floor in my room? That'll work. Yeah.
God. He's awful. I agree with Natalie. He is a poor excuse for a human.
Right, but whatever it was, he said that it turned her off. I was amazed at how quickly Natalie was like, "Oh, Eric, you mean that horrible garbage person, Eric? Like, let's go."
Right, I was like, "Yeah, go, Natalie. Throw Eric under the bus. He is terrible."
All right, so
I'm glad other people recognize it.
All right, so people getting thrown under the bus brings us to Libby and Andre.
Goodness.
So at long last, the conflict we've been promised since the beginning of the season is here. Some of Libby's family is getting to Moldova. Today, it's just her dad, Chuck, and her brother, Charlie, and the women will be getting there in a few days. We meet Libby and Andre on the way to the airport, and Andre, being Andre, asks Libby if she is excited, just so he can say, "I'm not," when she answers. He thinks Chuck and Charlie will be shocked by this former Soviet bloc country and isn't super excited to hear them crap all over it. Of course, he's not too far off. We see Chuck get out of customs with a big old USA hat, complaining about how Moldova lost his luggage and how the airport in Frankfurt was so much bigger. The plan is to go to Andre's parents' house, and in the car, Andre is belted with questions that are inane until they become frustrating. Are there Walmarts here? Do you have traffic tickets? Things like that. They find out that Andre was something like a police detective before he left to be a bouncer in Ireland. And both the Americans become very suspicious when Andre pointedly and evasively will not address why he left the police department and left the country. Back at Andre's parents' place, Chuck and Charlie are rightfully impressed at the gigantic spread of food that Andre's folks have put out, and doubly impressed because it came from such a small kitchen. If Libby was worried that Chuck and Charlie not getting along with Andre's family, she should have been less worried. They hate the same things about Andre that Chuck does. They try to get to the bottom of why Andre left the police years ago and why he's not working now. Literally everyone at the table thinks that Andre should get a job, including Chuck, who offered him one. Eventually, Andre appeals to Libby since they had decided together as a couple that he wouldn't work, and she totally throws him under the bus and says she wishes he would work. Andre is understandably pissed that she did that, especially since she even says, like, when did she decide that he wanted him to work? And she says, right now, just at this moment. I can change my mind. Eventually, they get into a bigger fight, and Libby says that she's not sure whether she even wants to go through with the wedding ceremony. All right, so, shot in the dark. Why did Andre leave the police?
Oh, goodness. Well, I don't think it's as, like, you know, dramatic or crazy as everybody's making it out to be.
Sure.
He very much implied that the conditions were bad, that he was getting paid like very little and that it was a stressful job. He probably saw a lot of shit that he's just like, the money isn't worth it. Right. And so it's like, we have a specific idea of how police work and how they are here and the conditions of, you know, what it is here. And I think Libby's family is very much imposing that on Andre. Mm-hmm. But I think if you live in a country where your police gets paid so little, this is the reason why bribes are so easy, because right. that's how cops get their money.
Sure.
And he doesn't even get the bribes because he's not out on patrol, as he said. He's like
sure.
working the right. desk.
So they probably gave the lower guys the desk jobs in this country, because you can't right. get any bribes if you're on the desk. Right.
Right. And so I don't think it's like anything like secretive or, you know, crazy or dramatic.
Then why be so evasive about it then?
I feel like it was edited that way because it's like he did talk about like pieces of it. Right. And right. so I feel like he did say that they only got paid 200 euros a month. That's ridiculous.
Right.
It's like, I don't know what like the cost of living is in Moldova, but that's like an absurdly low amount of money,
yeah.
considering that you're supposed to be college educated and that this is considered like a career job. This isn't something that, you know, like requires no skill.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's some amount of training in this. And then he also talks about how stressful it was and how unhappy he was. And then he also talks about that the conditions of police are bad. And then he also talked to, you know, it's like all these little pieces that I kind of clumped together into why I think
right.
it is, was kind of scattered all over the place. And so I kind of feel like that's, it was edited to look a certain way.
But there's, I also feel like he was also being evasive about it, not telling it, because he's just being spiteful to Chuck. Like, I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, okay. That's, yeah. I believe that too. That is, yeah, also a very valid theory and concern.
It's like, oh, there's something you want to know that I know? Yeah, I'm not telling you.
Yeah, I do feel like he likes messing with them. And so to him, it's kind of like, oh yeah, let them think the worst of me.
Uh-huh.
You know? But then at the same time, at what point is it not self-serving? You know?
Sure.
So it's kind of like, I feel like he's got to tell them at some point. And then even Libby was just like, wait, what's going on? Like, she just seems so confused.
She was so out of it. This. Yeah, like, I don't know. It was, at Libby was very disconnected. But
I did not like her in this episode.
Oh, no. Can we, before we jump to her though, can we talk about that food? Holy
crap. Oh, yeah,
crap.
That was quite a spread.
There was so much food. And that tiny right. little kitchen that they've all been eating at, it was just covered in different
kinds of
food.
I felt like half of it was like cold cut style
okay,
food.
That was
though.
True. They didn't, everything was not like something that the mom had prepared in the kitchen. Like that is right. definitely not the way.
It was like a spread of like meats and cheeses and breads and like yeah. fruits and yeah. you know, like platters.
It was still an intense amount of food. And if they're, you know, oh, yeah. if it's a place where the cops are making 200 euros a month, that was a lot of money they spent to impress these guys. Like this family really does truly is really trying to put their best foot forward here.
Yeah. I mean, their family has always been super kind. And like we've said in the past, like it's weird that Stefan, Andre's dad, is his dad. You're like, he's the
such
kindest
a sweetheart.
Person.
Yeah.
yeah. And you're like, how did Andre end up being your son? It like just doesn't seem to make any sense. But I feel like his whole family is like so warm and kind. And then you have Andre, who's definitely like the outlier anomaly in his family.
Right. Right. All right, then let's get to Libby. And
yeah.
Come on. What the hell was that? She.
Oh, God.
When did
there
you,
were lots of things.
So many things. But the thing was, she completely threw him under the bus.
Oh,
and
yeah.
then said, well, I just decided that right now. I'm allowed to change my mind. Like, what, you jerk?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, at the same time, like, I understand her frustration because it's not like she hasn't tried to get him to work before.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that he refuses to work with Chuck.
Right.
And so it's like, if he doesn't work with Chuck, then his prospects are a lot more limited. And then that's probably where Libby kind of gave up and was like, okay, are you really going to find a job? Probably not. Given like,
I mean, yeah, but
situation.
She, okay, my good question about Libby, could she find a job outside of Chuck?
That's an excellent question.
Because
and
they always
point.
Talk about, well, I don't want to be dependent on my dad. Well, he's giving you both jobs. You're dependent on your dad.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah, exactly. If your dad was gone out of the picture, then yes, you're going to have problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the idea of it, just because she does work for Chuck makes her like, oh, I'm an independent woman who does the thing. No, you're not. Like, and
right.
I totally get why Andre doesn't want to work for Chuck. Like, that's no different in his mind than, well, I can either work for Chuck and take his money, or I could just take his money. Like, either way, I'm completely dependent on Chuck for my money.
Right.
Why would I
definitely.
Work?
Definitely. Yeah. So, okay, let's go back to when Libby was picking up her family and they first saw Moldova. I thought it was kind of rude of Libby to make this big deal. Like, I can't wait to see my family. I've missed them so much. Like, in front of Andre. It's like... Mm-hmm. Dude hasn't seen his family in, like, right. what, 3 to 5 years? And you haven't seen your family in, like, a week?
Right. Yeah.
And you're going to go on and on. Like, I felt that was kind of rude to say that in front of Andre. Like,
that is true. That is true.
Credit where credit is due. Like, he sacrificed a lot for you, and he probably misses his family a lot more, but, like, he doesn't make a big stink about it like you do after a week.
After a week. That's a bit like when, like, you know, that's a bit like not complaining about your weight in front of somebody who's, like, clearly much bigger than you. You'd be like, just,
yeah.
You're allowed to feel that way. Just,
right.
Maybe you don't have to say anything out loud about it right now.
Yeah, like, consider your audience.
Yeah.
Like, is that going to make them upset about things? Yeah, and so then the other thing is just Chuck and Charlie's first reaction in Moldova. And let's keep in mind that it is in November during this time.
Sure.
And they are like, oh my gosh, it's cold and dreary here.
It doesn't get
here.
Like this at Tampa.
Terrible country.
Brr.
It's like, dude, every other place other than Florida is exactly the same in America right now. Like, calm yourself.
Right, right. I mean, it's not like, I mean, I'm sure it was probably warmer there than it was in Boston at the time.
Like, oh, yeah, absolutely. So it's like, this is not a Moldovan thing. This is a non-Florida thing. So you can't even, like, blame it on, you know, this
right.
is a non-US
it's so
country.
Dreary and gray.
It's
like,
so
yes,
cold.
It's winter. Like, yeah, that's yeah. what winter is like. Sorry, Florida, that you didn't get winter. You didn't get the memo. But of course, Chuck, the first time he ever traveled internationally, was going to travel with a hat that had a giant American flag on it and said USA. Like,
oh gosh,
I think they probably made him take his MAGA hat off before he got on the plane, but I'm like,
that's or the only started filming him. They're like, right. We can't exactly film you with that hat. Can you? It's either going to get blurred out.
Like, fine, I'll put on the USA hat. Like, that's just very much in their style of being like, I'm going to travel internationally, but everybody's going to know I'm American. Just in case there was any doubt. Can't have anybody thinking I was Canadian or something like that.
I always find it interesting when people get lost bags. I feel like I travel quite a bit and I've never had a lost bag. I don't know if I'm just the lucky one or what's going on. I know it happens, but it's always so weird to me when I see it.
I know it's happened to my cousin once when she came back from Germany. And it's not like, it wasn't like a lost bag. Like, they knew exactly where it was. They were just like, yeah, it's on it whatever got misplaced didn't make it to the – it like, didn't make – usually it's the bag that doesn't make a transfer. Right.
Yeah.
If it's a close transfer, like you might make it to the plane, but your bag doesn't. And so then it comes on the next flight there. So it was like they knew exactly.
Right.
Like, yeah, it'll be here at 8 tomorrow. And you're like,
yeah,
thanks. That's usually what it is. I think that's what it was, too. It wasn't really a lost bag. It was a delayed bag.
Yeah, that's not too bad. All right. So I think that's it for Happily Ever After, right?
I think so. Yep.
Okay. So we did not hear from Tanya and Sinjin, which I kind of forgot about.
Right.
So we are moving on to the other way.
Mm-hmm.
So who do you have?
I will start with Brittany and Yazan, because they were not in it very much. One scene with them.
Yeah.
So Brittany has been in Jordan for only 2 days. And as we know, things are going terribly.
It's not good.
So they are going to talk to Yazan's uncle, because he seems like a little more worldly and educated person who might be able to talk to Yazan's dad about the realities of the situation with Brittany. Yazan explains the situation, but while they're talking, Brittany is totally out of the loop because they're speaking in Arabic and she doesn't understand a word. She has no idea what's going on. The uncle does say that since this is all new to his father, a person who's coming from America, is not Islam, it might take a long time for him to accept what's going on. They talk about converting to Islam, and the uncle reminds us that it is forbidden to force someone to convert to Islam, so that whatever time she needs, she'll have to take. And Yazan kind of agrees, and he wants there to kind of be some time, which is different than what he was saying last time, actually, so that she can adjust to the culture and, you know, learn more about Islam. But they also agree that there is a lot that Brittany needs to change to be able to fit into the family enough to be accepted. Yazam worries that he doesn't know what Brittany's thinking about all this, probably mainly because they didn't talk to her at all. And that's why Yazan is okay with, you know, putting things on hold for a little while if the uncle can convince the dad that that's okay. So this is all pretty reassuring to Brittany because, you know, she finally feels like there's someone in the family that kind of has some kind of idea where she's coming from. So we meet this uncle and it's totally weird. Like, she totally seems like he's from a completely different world than Yazan's parents.
Absolutely.
Like, so I got that impression too. That's so strange to me that you know, that it can be two people from the same culture and the same family and just end up totally different outcomes like this.
Well, that's the thing, is it didn't even look like the dad. And now we didn't get to see his mom because she couldn't appear
Correct.
On camera.
Right.
But it's like, if you told me that those two were brothers, they don't look really much alike. Maybe, I don't know, because the dad had a gigantic beard.
Right.
But, and the uncle didn't, but it was just like, those two are related.
But like, I even thought, but the first they said, we're going to meet my uncle, and she didn't have a hijab on. Like, there is no way she would have ever met the dad without a hijab.
I thought
and
that
yet,
too,
so immediately it was like, oh, this is a very different dude.
Yeah. And he even said that, you know, he's like, well, you know, your father is very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So we're to understand that they may be a little bit more traditional.
Right.
And insistent upon like those kinds of traditions.
Which I appreciate because I didn't like that they kept saying like, oh, Jordanian gets Jordan's culture, Jordan's culture. And it's like, Jordan is one of the, I believe it's one of the more liberal, you know, Islamic countries in terms of, you know, the things. I imagine there's a lot more people like the uncle than there are like the dad. And they kind of made it sound like this family is what a typical Jordanian family is like.
Yeah. And then what I thought was interesting is that the uncle says that Brittany needs to change a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I feel like you need to really emphasize that because I feel like Yazan did translate that. But it was like it wasn't sinking it to Brittany.
No.
You know? She was just kind of like, oh, okay.
Oh, I hear you.
It's
sure.
Like, yeah. By change a lot, we mean convert religions. And you've already said how you felt about that.
Right.
So.
And she was like, and she still was like, well, I'll listen, which is fine. I mean, because that seems to be, that's going to be the biggest sticking point. Because the uncle was like that too. It was like, if she doesn't convert, it's a non-starter. That's. Like, we might be able to convince your dad to wait and, like, learn and be patient for the other things. But if she doesn't convert, no, it's not going to happen. And we can't force her to convert. So she's got to have to make that decision by herself. And that's what he's like. I don't know what she's thinking. And then, you know, Yazan doesn't ask her what she's thinking. she's just like, uh-huh. Is he going to talk to dad?
Yeah. Right. And I love how he says, like, I don't know what she's thinking. It's like, well, she's right there. Freaking just ask her.
Right.
Why this is so difficult. Yeah, they definitely were talking about her like she wasn't there.
Well, which when you speak zero of the language, it's kind of like you're not. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's the same way people talk about, like, you know, you talk about babies like they're not there. You talk about old people like they're not there sometimes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk about Kenny and Armando. So Kenny and Armando continue their walking tour around the town. At one point, Kenny tries to grab Armando's hand and Armando rebuffs him. Kenny is slightly taken aback that Armando refuses and thought he was farther along. Kenny thinks the worst that could happen is that they get called a name. Armando fears judgment and he's just not comfortable being out in a macho-centric society that can be homophobic. He also fears for their safety. Armando sees that Kenny feels rejected, but he says it's difficult for him considering he's only recently been out, whereas Kenny has been out for almost 35 years. Armando thinks Kenny can be a bit pushy when it comes to being out and proud. Armando asks Kenny if he thinks God would approve of them, and Kenny says yes, since God is love. Armando reminds him that the culture is different here than in the U.S. and that he just asks for patience and understanding. Armando eventually gives Kenny a kiss in front of Jesus.
Yay, the Jesus. Statue. Right.
Yes, Jesus is.
Well, Jesus is everywhere, so he's always giving a kiss in front of Jesus, right?
Right. But we have an actual representation of Jesus in the form of a statue.
Right.
Yeah. Jesus is watching. Look busy.
Yes.
So I'm still trying to figure out where exactly they are in Mexico. I don't know if you know.
I mean, it's...
How many of these Jesus statues are there?
Oh, I don't know. So I didn't look exactly where in Mexico, but I did look up where La Misión is. I mean, it's in Baja California, but...
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's pretty... I want to say it's like 40 miles south of the border or something like that. So it's not terribly far away from like Tijuana.
I don't remember any Jesus statue. I have been down probably...
Well, I'm not sure what side it was on. It might be on the Gulf side.
Okay. All right. Okay, that makes a little bit more sense. Because I was going to say, I've been down at least 2 hours south of the border driving distance. So...
Well, I don't know, but I don't know if that gets you very as far. I don't know. I have not been there, so it's a lot farther away from me.
40 miles at least.
I'm not sure. It wasn't. I know the town isn't on the coast.
Mm. But it seems like it is, doesn't it? Like, all the pictures they have are, like, water pictures and coastal pictures.
I don't know.
All right. But there wasn't a whole lot going on with them. Nothing new and not a whole lot to discuss with them other than it is kind of weird to think about that Kenny has been out and about loud and proud for way longer than Armando's even been alive.
Yeah. Yeah. That's – well, I mean, okay. So Kenny had a – and that I don't want to say we're colored by it, but – all things considered, when Kenny came out, right? Because Kenny is mm-hmm. how old is he?
57.
So 57. So that means he came out like
when he was 19.
When he was 19, right?
So it's like 38 years ago.
Yeah, but the other thing is that would have been in, and this is something they haven't brought up that I thought of immediately, which means Kenny came out at 19 as a gay man in 1982.
Yeah, that's not good times for him.
Not good times to be a gay man in America.
No.
Right?
No.
And so that's something they haven't, you know, talked about or mentioned. And I was like, that's just like a huge like thing. Like, I feel like they're missing a giant piece of the puzzle here when we say that. Like,
right.
But yeah, so it's just been different. And from what he's – at least the story he told us at the beginning is, you know, he struggled with it. But 19 – you know, back in those days, it's still a relatively young age to be like, no, I'm out, totally out, right?
Yeah.
Not closeted to anybody at all. Like, I told my parents when I was 19, and he didn't really have many, you know, I wouldn't say none because I don't know his total story, but from what he told us, it went pretty smoothly, right? Everybody kind of accepted him.
Right. And I think that's part of Armando's hesitation is it hasn't been smooth.
Right.
He had a false start earlier. He tried to come out. His family, like, just they mentally rejected the idea. Mm-hmm. And they were like, nope, that's not a thing. You're not really gay. And so he had to go back in the closet until, you know, now. And now he's like, okay, nope, for real this time.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, it hasn't been an easy transition for him. And so that's why he has all these hesitations. I do kind of wonder a little bit, like, how legitimate the concern for safety is. Because even Kenny was saying, you know, like, what's the worst that could happen? They call us a name, right? But what is the worst?
Is that the worst that can happen? Because that's a lot worse happens in other countries, I'm sure. I don't know about Mexico, but I can definitely.
I mean, even here.
Yeah. There's still hate crimes against gay people. Yeah, absolutely. And right. And so, but it's that's something that Kenny's been dealing with for ever, and I'm sure it's better now than it was when he was 19. And so, like, it's, you know, gotten easy. Not only has it gotten easier, he's been used to dealing with it, but it's kind of gotten fewer and farther between. And let's be honest, if somebody yells something at Kenny, he won't understand what they're saying anyway.
Yeah, that's true. I was gonna say Kenny doesn't even know really the basics. So, but you know how it is. Like, I feel like a lot of people know cuss words more so than they know anything that's actually functional in other languages.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that's how
it is. I feel like there's probably like whatever slur they happen to use for, you know, gay people in Mexico. I'm sure you'd pick that one up real quick if people were screaming at you all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yep. All right. So moving on. I'm going to go with Tim and Melissa. So finally, Tim has arrived in Colombia. He gets to the airport with Pepe the cat, and Melissa meets him there with her two dogs. Neither of them is sure how the meeting will be because of the awkwardness of their situation and because they haven't seen each other in 7 months. Specifically, Tim knows that every other time they got back together before the cheating, it was all running and kissing and jumping and, you know, hugs and kissing and everything. But he's pretty sure that's not going to be in the cards. When he does come out of customs, she smiles, they walk, they have a hug, they have a kiss. But no running or jumping. Next, we see Tim and Melissa. Oh, then they have to pack all the stuff into the car because she brought the smallest car possible. And he struggles to get his 6'4" frame into the car, let alone the 2 suitcases and 3 animals. Next, we see Tim and Melissa walking around the city and taking in the views. And getting some street food. The town is way hillier than Tim had anticipated. Where was he from? Wasn't he from like Iowa or something? Someplace?
No, he's from Texas. Oh. Like outside of Dallas.
Oh, yeah, Alabama, Texas, right. Still pretty flat, depending on what part of Texas. But it's a hilly city. And they're getting some street food before they sit down to have a beer. And Melissa wants to talk about the cheating. She wants to hear all the details, and he kind of goes into it. It was talking and flirting, and then she came over, and he thought he could keep the line, and then things had happened, and blah, 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 blah. So she calls him selfish. She kind of points out the parts of the story that don't make sense, and eventually he just kind of runs out of things to say. He was like, I don't know what else to say about it. This is the way it was. And he's disappointed that he keeps having to have this conversation over and over again for the whole – for like an entire year. So, okay. So let's just start with there. What do you think about her getting to the bottom, trying to get to the bottom of things here?
I feel like there is something that she is missing from like understanding of the situation, and it isn't the story. Right, and I correct. Feel like that's what Tim keeps on thinking it is. Like Tim keeps on thinking, to his defense here, like it's because that's how she's asking it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me again about what happened. Tell me again, like, why you did this. Tell me again, like, what exactly you did before, during, after.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so from Tim's perspective, he's just recounting the exact same story over and over and over again. And you could absolutely tell he was really frustrated that he was having to do this. It doesn't make him feel good to have to relive it.
Right.
You know, and he's also frustrated. He's like, we've already been through this, like kind of feeling.
Yeah. So I was like, it struck me as something. It's so super common for people who get mm-hmm. cheated on. Like that is intensely common for them to be like, I just need all of the details. Right. If I just have all the details, I can make it make sense. And so I need to know everything. And it's one of those things that like when you go to a therapist, they will tell you, stop worrying about the details. The details are not going to help you. They are not going to help you see it. And the hardest hurdle that she needs to get over is she will never understand why he did this.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to say is that she wants a question answered. And I don't know what that question is, but maybe to your point, like the question is why.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why did you do this? And so hearing the story again, she's trying to get why, you know? And I mean, part of it too is that, I mean, at one point she does ask him, why did you do this? And he says, oh, to satisfy my physical urges. And she even says, bullshit, you know, mm-hmm. like bullshit. Like I'm not satisfied with that answer. There must be something else. And so I think part of it is that he does keep on repeating this story, but she's not accepting his response. She's not getting her questions answered. And so I feel like they really do need intervention at this point. They need to go to couples therapy. Because it's just going to be reliving the same thing. And it's basically insanity. They're going to keep on repeating this conversation. She's still not going to get her answer.
She's never answered. Yeah, she cannot get. There is no answer that will satisfy her. Like it doesn't exist. So yeah. Like, and that's one of the things I think that happens a lot of time at couples therapy too, is when they mm-hmm. decide to go, the one person who kind of thinks like, you know, I could totally see, not necessarily these specific people, but in this situation, it's the spouse that was cheated on, who thinks they're going to get the couple's therapist to kind of come after the other person.
Right.
And they're usually like, no, you need to let it go. Like, if you're going to let it go, you have to let it go. And you have to stop, you know, trying to zoom in. If I just knew another detail, that would unlock this whole thing and I would totally get it. And then I could, you know, since I understand it, we can move on.
Yeah, I feel if anything, like, the details will haunt you, right?
Right.
Because if, like, you know those little details like that, it's something that's going to stick with you and you're going to start obsessing over it.
Yeah, I feel like you don't want to have a mental picture. Like, you make mental pictures, right?
And right.
But you don't want to have an accurate mental picture of it you keep coming back to in your
right,
head.
Because yeah. Then it's like when you're in bed, you know, it's kind of like, okay, you're going to then picture, you know, Tim with his other woman, like...
Well, you're going to do that anyway.
You don't want to picture that.
You're going to do that anyway.
Yeah, but it's like...
it's without knowing the accurate details of it, that...
Right.
It won't help. It doesn't... So...
No,
yeah.
Absolutely not. So... Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, let's talk about Tim's weight gain.
Oh, right. They kind of brought it up with the dog first. Yeah, the dog looks
fat.
Yeah,
she was so like, really? Oh, the dog's
gained
weight.
Yeah, the dog's gained weight. That's right, Tim.
Yeah, and then it was kind of her not to say it to his face.
Uh-huh.
She said it in the interview. She's like, Tim's gained weight. I don't know how to tell him.
I feel bad about noticing it, but I really did. Yeah.
But, I mean, looking at the pictures, she's not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But she says that he looks really different. Yeah, he looks different. I think youth is part of it, you know, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like weight gain and youth.
That's true. That's true. But I mean, it hasn't been that long since she's seen him that he'd be like, you're so old.
Well, I don't know when those pictures were taken.
That's true.
The pictures that we've seen.
But I'm saying her mental picture of him is not that different age-wise. But,
well, I hope not. It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's. It seems like he's been under a lot of stress, and there's people who gain weight when they're under stress, and there's people who lose weight when they're under stress.
Yeah, well, maybe he needs to keep walking those hills around town.
Yeah, I feel like if he does that, I don't know about eating those flower things that they had in the street, though. That's not going to help.
Yeah, probably not. Oh, goodness. So, the cat.
Okay. Her cat. She wants.
Is it
she's
her
glad
cat?
To see her cat. No, it's his cat. But they did they live together before she came back to Columbia? Or because she spent a lot of time with that cat.
Yes. Okay. But that was my question is, I thought this was Tim's emotional support cat. How is it her cat?
Maybe it's his emotional support cat because it was her cat. And she left it. And he was like, oh, I love this cat so much because this is my connection to her. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
I don't think she would have named the cat Pepino or something. That seems like a totally cheese stick name.
I was going to say, I don't know. It doesn't seem like how many cats here do you know named Pepe?
Well, because Pepe is short for something else. He said it was like Pepino or something like that. It was like an Italian name.
It's definitely not an American name.
Yeah. So I don't know. Pepe.
All right.
All right. Who's next?
Okay, next up we have a baby in Ariella. So Janice, Ari's mom, has insisted that baby and Ari moved into her hotel room since their place is not up to Janice and Ari's standards. They venture to tour the hospital. Ari tells her mom it looks worse on the outside, but generally they should have lower expectations. Ari wants her to have her own room and wants to be assured that pain management is provided for. Janice jokes that the bumpy ride will assist with Ari's labor on their way to the hospital. Sister Rahel greets them to guide them through the hospital. Janice is already giving her the lowdown that her and her husband work in a hospital. Private rooms are in fact available at an extra charge. Janice is impressed with the NICU, the process, the supply of medication, the cleanliness, and the security. The nurse shows Ari the labor ball, and she insists on letting Ari try, and things get awkward as baby is behind her, massaging her, and Ari gets embarrassed as Janice looks on. Even though Janice ultimately approves of the hospital, she wonders if she can convince Ari to give birth in America still. Later, baby takes Ari and Janice to see a traditional coffee ceremony, which includes popcorn. Ari says she likes the hospital and feels comfortable giving birth there. Janice is disappointed that the hospital ended up being okay because her real mission was to get Ari to come back to the U.S. She uses this opportunity to ask baby about his ex-wife and ask why they broke up. Baby tells us some kind of vague story about how his ex-wife got upset because she thought he was talking to someone else, so she blocked him. And then Janice asks what his plan is, and baby says he doesn't want to go to the U.S., but he wants to rent a guest house. Aerie is really quiet and she's just feeling overwhelmed. She tells us that she doesn't want to be dependent on her parents, but she is limited in her ability to work, which she does freelance editing and writing. All right, so what did you think of the hospital and of Janice's approval of the whole thing?
I mean, the hospital was fine. Like, yeah, I feel like okay, I feel like redeemed when I was like, babies are born in Ethiopia. It's fine, Janice.
Right.
And now I'm like, yeah, see, it's fine.
See, look, NICU, surgery room for a cesarean, like the medication.
People can't steal the babies because right, that was a concern that was a she thing. Had. Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, are they tagged? Yes, the babies are tagged.
Yeah, so I was like, yeah, Janice, what about that, huh? Bring your biases here. I thought
the hospital was nice.
Right.
Yeah, and their labor ball, and it just seems like...
It was all,
yeah,
it was all
fine. I mean, the rooms were a little tiny, but, I mean, size is like nothing, right?
No.
Compared to, like, the actual...
Absolutely.
Like she said, cleanliness of it, mm-hmm. the process... The supplies and equipment they have there.
Right, right. They Absolutely. Were like, we have this medication. She's like, oh, I'm familiar with that medication. She was like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They had like lots of medication. They were showing her like three different kinds of medication.
Yeah.
Even Aerie, she was kind of funny. Like the kinds of questions she was asking, it's like clear that she doesn't really have any medical knowledge.
Uh-huh.
She's like, so how, what about the bleeding? And they're like, what about the bleeding? Like, can you be a little bit
a little more
specific?
Yeah.
So things like that. So I guess it was good that Janice was there.
It was, but you know I'm no fan of Janice with her. I guess okay, fine at the hospital. I guess
Well, I thought it was kind of ridiculous how she starts off with like, me and my husband both work in hospitals.
Yeah.
Like,
my husband is a doctor and I'm a nurse and we're a yeah. But
yes, so we're used to like these high standards of, mm-hmm. you know, the medical
right.
industry.
Yeah. I did like the nurses' reactions. They're like, what happens if you keep bleeding? They're like, well, give her medicine? Like, what do you
yeah,
want?
I know. It's like, is this a trick question?
Yeah. Like, where's the C-section? It right there? Like, I don't, what is this?
I thought it was interesting, their little anecdote about, I can't
the
remember
sandbag?
Exactly what the sandbags. Yes. They're like, oh, the sandbags. We'll put a sandbag on your belly to help with the contractions. It's like, is that a thing?
Not well, they said it's something they try if it's natural before they, you know,
yes,
move on to the medication.
Yes, which I'm like,
yeah.
I'm all for it. I mean, that's not the only thing they try, but absolutely mm-hmm. they want to try naturally. But it's like, well, is that a thing here? Like, because there are plenty of women and there's like a whole industry for it who are trying to do the whole birth thing as naturally as possible.
Sure.
Do they have sandbags here?
I don't. I didn't ever seeing sandbags at the hospital. I've been there for two births. But
yeah.
The yoga ball is super common. Like every delivery room has a yoga ball now. Like that's
right.
That's totally on board. And there's like all kinds of like, you know, they give you all kinds of like positions and like stuff to try. But I don't think I've seen a sandbag. That's a new one. Because it's not necessarily the way the contraction goes. I don't know is that way. I don't know that the muscles are north and south like that. I don't know. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah, neither am I. So what did you think of Baby's explanation of his ex-wife?
I think the conversation was moving way too fast for him and he did not know what was going on. That's my thing. It's hard to tell what he was being evasive about and what he was just like, oh crap, let me translate this into English. And by the time he got it out, it was like, it was on social media and she thought I was talking to, and she's like, well, what are you talking to? How did you know she was doing that? And she it was like, and it was like Janice was like three questions down the line and he was like,
yeah, he's like, wait, like, well, I forgot what the first question and I forgot what I was saying to you.
Yes.
And so, because I definitely felt like it was very fragmented, like I was like, wait, how did you go from being blocked on social media from you were talking to someone or there was a misunderstanding about you talking with someone?
Uh-huh. Well, okay. We say that like we haven't just seen, you know, baby girl Lisa with her and you know, Usman with their repeated
– oh, God.
With the females on your account and I'm blocking you now and then you block me before I can block you. Like that. Maybe she was a baby girl Lisa type person. Who knows?
Oh, gosh. Yes. Maybe it was Baby Girl Lisa.
Oh, geez.
Maybe that's where Baby got his name.
Baby and Baby Girl Lisa together at last.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. We all know that's not right.
Oh, please no. He doesn't. No one deserves that. this baby doesn't deserve. Baby seems like a sweet guy. I don't want that for him.
He does. There's something like very genuine and endearing about him.
Yeah. I mean, it was very different from the way that he kind of got introduced at the beginning of the season. As like, yeah. Oh, he's a dancer
like a
slash
man.
The thing slash personal trainer slash this. I thought he was going to be like a player, right? And like, no,
yeah,
he seems,
that's what I thought too.
Like, he seems pretty genuinely sweet, right?
Right, and it like he genuinely seems to want to make Aerie happy. Like, even with this whole house situation, mm-hmm. he's just like, oh, whatever you want. Like, he just seems like such a sweet and genuinely sweet guy.
All right, so our last couple is Devon and Ji-hoon. So Devon wants to show her mom a less disastrous part of Korea, so they go to the market. It's different from a traditional American market because there are a lot of different shops selling all kinds of different things like fish, chicken feet, toys, and slippers. Drusilla seems to be having a grand old time looking at all the live and dead animals to sell, meaning that Devon and her mom have to keep saying, "Don't touch anything!" over and over to her. They sit to have a meal, and they struggle to order. They try to order the most popular thing with beef and rice using the translator app, but what comes back is some unidentified vegetables and insects. Now Devon is coming, and then we have Devon going over to have a talk. Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped the part. At that point, Devon brings up what she's thinking about doing with Ji-hoon, and she says what she needs to do is talk over Ji-hoon's finances with Ji-hoon's mom specifically, because she was the one holding the money before she makes a decision. Devon's mom says if it was her decision, they would have been on the plane already. So now we see Devon going to come over to talk with the whole family about Ji-hoon's financial situation. Ji-hoon feels very guilty and can't bear to face Devon when she gets there, and that she kind of feels like he's ignoring her, so they start off on a bad foot. We start with the translator app, and the translator app was something today. The parents try to apologize for not being financially supportive themselves, but again, the translator app gets in the way, and Ji-hoon kind of says you can't translate anything that long. That one wasn't too bad. It just kind of was distorted.
Oh, my gosh.
They start having the same conversation they always have, and clearly the dad didn't know about the arrangement where the mom was keeping the money, and she keeps saying, "You lied to me," blah, blah, blah. Then the translator app just goes completely haywire. It says – first of all, Ji-hoon starts to get very frustrated when it translates, "I was afraid I would waste the money," as "I'm going to waste the money." And then it starts saying something about birds and islands. And then I think the funniest one – this is the fun – I laughed so hard at it. It changes – Ji-hoon says, "Give me one more chance," and it says, "Even if the son looks at the bridegroom." It just is like, pick some Asian sounding poetry and just spit that out because I didn't get it.
This was seriously so funny. I cannot remember the last time I laughed so hard at this show was during this translator app like debacle.
all the birds have left the island. Like, what?
It was so ridiculous.
It wasn't
even
anywhere close. But anyway.
Yeah.
Then they just give up on the translator app and start yelling at Devon Korean.
Oh, that's not funny, yeah, though.
It wasn't as funny, but she's getting very unnerved because Ji-hoon was just so frustrated. He started frustrated. He was so frustrated with this app. But then Devon gets the translator app back, and she says that you scammed me, you lied to me, and my life is ruined now, which actually gets Ji-hoon's mom to smirk. And then Devon says, "This is not a joke." And then Ji-hoon just has had enough and he storms out.
Well, I think he misunderstood. I think he thought she was calling him a joke.
Yes.
Because he even said, "I am not a joke."
Yes, that's true. That's true. So he took it as her calling him a joke. Mm-hmm. All right. So of all the things, we laughed so hard at this translator.
Yeah.
Sharp Entertainment go out and find, like, did they go to Amazon and like get the 1-star translator? Definitely. Don't get the 5-star one. Get the 1-star translator.
No, I think that's just how it is. I mean, like, let's be real here. Google Translate isn't even like 100%, right? Now, granted, it got really bad.
Now, granted, I don't know because I don't speak Korean. It could have been like the word for bird is like really close to the word for money. So it makes kind of sense why it would say that. But I don't know, from the only speaking English part, for seeing what was on the screen versus what came out of the app was
so hilarious.
Really funny.
Yes, it was so funny. I was like laughing at it so hard. And then you like feel bad because it's just like this translator app is making everything worse. The fact that he says like I didn't want to and he translates to I will waste money. Yeah. It's like no, that's like significantly changing the meaning of what he said.
Yeah.
Whereas one is like an apology and the other is like what are you doing?
Right. I honestly do think that. And I think she trusts it. I don't know what it is, but she, you can see when he says it, like she is a shocked face. Like you're going to waste the money instead of just being like, yeah. Well, that doesn't make any sense. That must've been the translator. Did you just say?
Why would she think it's wrong? You know?
Why would he say, I plan on wasting money?
Well, I don't know. From her perspective, he's just yelling and getting mad. And it's kind of like, maybe it's a defiant. Like, I will waste the money.
It was totally a thing where he was getting super frustrated with the translator app. And she kept taking that as, he's mad at me.
Yeah.
But, okay. So, actually, the thing that bothered me the most was actually Devin. Right?
Mm-hmm.
My life is ruined now. Come on. Yeah. Is her life ruined?
I don't know. It depends on your definition of ruined.
I have a...
If your life being ruined as in my life savings are gone?
When I say something's ruined, I mean it's garbage and we can't use it anymore.
Okay, I feel like that is a very literal definition and I feel like that would apply to, I think, how most people would kind of consider it. But, you know, people can be dramatic too.
Right, and so, and that's what it was. It was a joke because she said that and I honest to God, because we talked to about Jihoon's mom last time. She...
Yeah.
Really doesn't take a lot of crap. And she is not a dramatic person. She's like, get off your ass and do something. Yeah. Yeah. Right? So when you when somebody's like to her, like, my life is ruined. She's like, you're 23 years old. Shut up. Your life is not ruined.
Right.
Being ridiculous.
But I can see how Devin like takes from the perspective. Okay. And then once again, like, okay, so what? Her life savings are gone. Her life of, she's only been working, what, 7 years of her life
right.
at most. Mm-hmm. Right? So 7 years of savings. Yeah, that sucks, but that's not like a life ruiner. But maybe she thinks of it more from the perspective of, now you strap me with another kid. And I can absolutely see how, you know, we've kind of talked about this before. It's like, it's not easy to date being a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
And now she has two kids from two different fathers. Like, that's always going to be a challenge. And that was the one thing that I didn't really agree with her. She was kind of saying, if this doesn't like get resolved, I am never going to speak to him again. I'm going to leave this country.
No, you don't have
like,
that choice.
That is it.
You don't have that option.
Right. You have a child involved. And mm-hmm. so it's kind of one of those things where I was like, that seems a bit extreme. And would you really deprive your child of knowing his father?
Right. Well, and that's what I'm saying. So if you say all that and kids don't understand the subtleties of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
God forbid this kid ever watches this show or sees what had happened. And you're like, so now the kid is like, you know, Taeyang is like, oh, I ruined your life. That's what happened. You had me and that ruined everything. That's, yay, let's lay that on the kid.
Yeah. So I just, her being so extreme with that.
Yeah. I mean, it struck me. It's in the same vein as the people who are like, I'll never find love again. This is the last chance I have at it. You know, that though.
Right.
It's that kind of overdramatic stuff that I just like. Ugh.
Right. So, yeah, I definitely took like the you ruined my life as being a bit over the top. But then in the context of like, you know, this definitely has changed the course of her life. Maybe she means it more like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like sometimes like I can think of plenty of people that I've dated that I walk away and it's like that has not changed the course of my life.
Sure.
You were a blip on the radar.
Right.
Like, you know, nothing has really overall changed anything. But for something like this, this is a life changer. She now has another child that is going to change like how you have to navigate the dating world. How it's going to change like future partners. It's going to change how she has to live her life and prioritize things. So, yeah, maybe not ruined, but changed my life.
Yeah.
For the more difficult.
Okay. I'll give you that. All right. Yeah. So that's everybody this week.
Right.
So let's look at students of the week. Who is your student of the week?
My student of the week, and definitely I felt like slim pickings this week, right?
Yeah.
And we kind of say that some weeks, but some weeks are definitely better than others. So I'm going to give it to actually Paul. And I feel like, good job, Paul. You actually did something that is making your wife happy. You actually successfully got a place. You are fixing it up to make a livable and suitable home. I'm hoping within your financial means, but I mean, given how Paul doesn't really get shit done, like, this is Paul getting shit done. All right, good job, student of the week.
Yeah, I also said Paul, though.
Oh, you did? Okay, I thought it was going to be the only one. No. I thought it was going to be the cheese standing alone here.
No, I went with Paul. I mean, you're right, because they're really, everybody has some major flaws that they through them,
definitely.
Especially main cast. And then, you know, our supporting cast this week was like Devin's mom.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, like Devin's mom. She was, oh, look, chicken feet. Do you want to eat one? No. Like,
no. But she's not adventurous at all.
No, she onions. She like ate the, oh, these are onions.
Oh my God, what is this? Oh, an onion. Oh gosh.
Yeah.
She did not eat, was it silkworms?
I think so, yeah. I'm not sure exactly what it was. Well, it was funny because that market super reminded me of, like, in my neighborhood, there's a Lottie Plaza and a H Mart, like, across the street from each other.
Oh yeah.
And
we
have
H Marts too.
Yeah.
That's weird.
And so it really reminded me of that, because you go and you're like, oh, look, groceries and phone cases for some reason. And, oh, look, fabric. Okay. Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's a food court.
I don't personally know how I'd feel about the bug eating either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's one of those things where I can't look at it because then I'll picture it, right?
Right.
If I just like kind of close my eyes and eat it, I think I would be okay. But I just don't want to look.
I could.
At what
I don't know. I could do it because in my head I would justify it. You know, as a true Marylander, is a bug really that much different than a crab?
Right. That's actually fair. At the same time, I don't know if I really want to see like eyes on crabs either.
Yeah, you do. They look at you.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. Not really into that either.
Okay.
All right. What about class dunce?
My class dunce was Libby.
Okay.
She just completely, like, I feel like I'm not always on board with Andre, but like when it's a fight between everybody and everybody's kind of ganging up on him, and it is an agreement you made, right? It is something that you had decided as a couple that he would do this to bet, like, at that point, decide to tell him, nah, I want it to be different. Like, that's not cool. Like, that's one of those situations where you should be expected to kind of have your partner's back. And, like, she didn't. Like, she – and it was because her dad was there. If it was anybody else, she might have backed it up. But she couldn't stand up to her dad. And her dad was like, well, don't you want him to work? And, of course, she's going to be like, well, yeah, I want him to work, Dad, because you're Dad. Yay.
Yeah. All right. My class dunce, I went with Angela. I just thought her attitude toward this culture and trying to, like – basically humiliate Michael in front of his family, like, intentionally. It was just disgusting to me.
Sure.
And I just class dunce. And then her whole thing with, I'm a hypochondriac,
She didn't have anything. Like, she wasn't even gagging and didn't have anything to spit out. So she took a swig of the Coke so she could open the door and be like, so fake. Like, so fake.
It was so dramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, not into that. All right, what about your life lesson?
So, I know that Eric is a jerk, right? And
oh God.
We don't like what we found out. And she probably, Larissa probably was better off knowing it. But don't go through your significant other's phone. Like, if there's a reason you feel like you have to, then that's a conversation you need to have, right?
Yeah, that's valid, sure.
Well, that's the other thing, because that's the other thing. I say that because it's a bit like Melissa. You're never going to feel better.
Yeah.
After doing it. You're never going to put yourself at ease. It's never, like, there's only bad things can happen.
Right, right. So my life lesson actually is also inspired with Eric. And it kind of goes against just him talking about and revealing his sex life with anyone else after they're broken up. To me, it's kind of on the same plain as revenge porn.
Oh, I was gonna. I almost said that earlier. Like, but let's if you hear all this, Larissa, be thankful you didn't send him nudes. Like,
yeah, exactly. Because it's pretty much like right up there. The only difference is like this is just more slander mm-hmm. than it is like you can actually show like photographic evidence of some kind. But it's really the same. You know, you're trying to get someone back by humiliating them from these intimate moments that this person trusted you with. And that's just not okay. Like him and Colt, it's not okay. And I do feel bad for Larissa because it is incredibly humiliating and embarrassing that she's being talked about like this.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. Like I said, mine was not a defense of Eric. It was just looking out for your own mental health. Like, just don't do it. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so
that wraps up this week. And so we'll be back next week with the next episode of both Happily Ever After and The Other Way. And we're kind of in the thick of it right now. So I don't think there's an end in sight.
No, I don't think there is. I mean, usually, 16 episodes now? So we're probably right almost in the middle.
Goodness. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that means we're going to be doing this during the school year.
Oh, man, the school year is going to start. Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah. Well, at least for me, when do you start?
August 31st.
Okay, so I start a couple weeks before you. We start on the 19th or the 20th, whatever that mm-hmm. Monday, Tuesday is.
Right.
So, yeah, it's going to be some late school nights for us then with the recording.
Right. Hopefully, Mike.
We'll see how that
hopefully
goes.
Hopefully, don't give me first grade class. But we'll figure it out. We'll be here for everybody.
Yep, we will. We will. All right, see you soon.
Okay, bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye. Good.